This is Talk Radio 1210, WPHT On Demand. On Demand.
Take that. How y'all doing? Yes, I'm out here. You can see me on YouTube as well. Jamming to my music selection. I love it. It gives me energy. It gives me life. I love it. Thank you guys so much for listening in to the Kathy Barnett Show on the number one talk radio station in Philadelphia. So excited to have all of you guys for this hour. So much to go through. I'm going through headlines today because it's just a lot out there. It really, really is. If you guys were with me on this past Tuesday, we aired a special edition of the Kathy Barnett Show as I walked through a lot of interviews. I had calls from Congressman Scott Perry. I had an interview that I aired with Senator Joni Ernst. And I had a lot of other people calling in talking about Donald Trump's big, beautiful bill that passed on, was either Wednesday or Thursday, maybe Thursday. Our legislators only have a 3-day week. They travel going home on Friday. They travel coming back from home on Monday. So they really only work 3 days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Tuesday, we did the show. And pretty much it came in line with what we were talking about. But if you listen to that, it was so much fun. Hey, I'm looking over here at YouTube. The YouTube fam is out here. Good morning, everyone. So that happened. So it did pass out of the House. And so now it's moving right on over to the Senate. And that would be a battle. The Senate is not so accommodating to Donald Trump. If you remember, as soon as Donald Trump got on Air Force One to do his tour of the Middle East, several of our senators met and refused to codify the DOGE cuts, but also, for example, with the U.S. aid, they refused to do that. And a couple of other things that they were like, no, we're not having it. We're not lining up with Donald Trump. You already see the chest beating. So we will see how that all plays. But at the end of the day, as I talked about on Tuesday, is that there is a squeeze on the middle class, and it has been occurring for well over 50 years now, since 1971 to today, from the moment we decoupled from holding the dollar to a stable unit of measurement. The growth in this country looks like a hockey stick. It the shaft or the long part of the hockey stick. I mean, the productivity has been off the chain, and that productivity is our productivity within the middle class primarily. But we have not gotten the benefit of any of that productivity. Usually, if there's that much of an increase in productivity, then everyone gets to share and the wealth that is generated from all of this productivity and efficiency and money that is flowing. But our wages within the middle class has essentially stayed relatively flat from 1971 to today. And the only people who are accumulating all of this wealth are the top 10%. The top 10% in this country control over 70% of the nation's wealth. And I don't know about you, but that's a problem for me. As I study this and look at this, that's a problem for me. And so, because, you know, you have the top 10%. There's so much money that is flowing in our country. I mean, it's money, money, money all over the place. There's so much money flowing, but none of it is flowing to the middle class. It's really flowing to the top 10% and the bottom 50%, because the bottom 50% of this nation, basically, they don't have to work. They don't have to pay their own rent. They don't have to pay their own light bills. They get SNAP for food stamps. They get Section 8 for housing. They get Medicaid, so all their insurance is taken care of. They don't have to buy their own coat. We're giving them Obama phones still. I mean, these people don't have to do much of anything. They just have to basically wake up and breathe. And the 40% of us in the middle class, we're basically paying for both ends of the spectrum. We're paying for the people, for the top 10%, because it's our labor that is providing all of this efficiencies for them. And then it's our taxes that are paying for the bottom 50%. And I don't think that's very fair. And very little attention has been placed on the middle class. When I ran for Senate, no one really talked about the middle class. I mean, yeah, they would throw out words like Main Street, from Wall Street to Main Street. But that was just, you know, rhetoric. In this presidential election, no one really talked about the middle class. I mean, look right now. No one is really talking about the middle class. Democrats are only talking about, you know, your Medicaid is going to be taken away from you. But that's not the middle class. That's the bottom 50% who benefits from that primarily. And so you have to ask yourself, how do we get the attention to be placed on the 40% of us in the middle who are being squeezed? And I know we're being squeezed because not only did I travel 1,500 miles all across Pennsylvania, and so I saw it as I'm walking into your homes and talking to you, but also when I was on the trail with Vivek Ramaswamy all across the nation. So now I'm in New Jersey, and I'm in Iowa, and I'm in Tennessee, and I'm in California, and I'm traveling all across the country, and I saw the despair in how we're living. I saw our roads, I saw our homes. I mean, just the cost of a home today, the average price of a home is $400,000. How are our children going to pay for that? How does that happen exactly? And yes, we're dealing with this runaway debt and the bill that comes out of the that passed out of the House is going to add $3 to $4 trillion on top of the already $36 trillion of debt. Our deficit, we're running a $2 trillion deficit right now. It looks like going to add another $2 trillion. So, I mean, it's just monopoly money at this point to these people. And the ones who are being squeezed with no one really talking to us is the middle class. Now, before you, hey, first of all, call in. Let's talk about it. 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210, because I would love for someone to call and talk about the poor, the poor, the poor. Yes. What did Jesus say? Who said it best? Jesus, when he said, the poor will be with you always. Poor people are always going to be with you. There is no such promise for the middle class. As a matter of fact, outside of America, I think we're the first to do it where... Because everywhere else, no one was doing what America did 200 plus years ago when our founding fathers decided to give the power to the we the people. Prior to America, what you had across the world were rulers and renters. You had those who ruled and you had those who rented. And you had no one in the middle owning some land, doing anything in the middle. And our nation, when you look at what is happening to us, we are becoming a nation of renters and rulers. Let me do it in inverse. We're becoming a nation of rulers and renters. And the middle class is quickly disappearing. That's a problem. And I know in politics, we just want to, you know, I mean, pull out the violins. Let's talk about poor people. Listen, I was poor. I mean, I would love for someone who was poorer than me to call. I grew up on a pig farm in southern Alabama in a one-stop sign town. I grew up in a home with no insulation, no running water, an outhouse in the back, a well on the side. So when I hear people talking about poor, 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 I'm like, yeah, let's compare. Let's compare and contrast. If you grew up in a more dire strait than I did, I give it to you. That's not usually a competition you want to win. But I would love for somebody to call 855-839-1210. Because let me tell you also, city poor, you know, is very different from country poor. City poor, people can be poor in the city and still live very far above the poverty line compared to someone who's country poor. Country poor, I mean, you're so poor you can't afford the other O. You just po when you country poor. And that's how I grew up. And yet, a couple of things that worked in my favor. I don't recall anyone ever looking at me and saying, Kathy, girl, hang it up. You're black, you're poor, you're a woman. Girl, you can't. You got all the strikes against you, right? I don't recall anyone ever looking at me and saying that. And so as a child, I had a wonderful childhood. I had no, you know, when you're a kid and you're loved and you feel protected, you don't know about your economic situation. You don't even know really about your social situation until you walk outside of your little community. And now you realize, okay, I'm in the deep South. And there's a lot that comes with that, right? But you don't even really notice that because you come back into your own community and you feel loved and you feel protected and you feel cared for and provided for. And it wasn't until I grew up that I was able to look back and say, my God, how did we survive that? And yet we did. But even in that situation, I felt like, because I did it. So I felt like there was hope. I felt like if I went to college, trained myself to do something, trained my hands to do something, trained my mind to think strategically, that I could climb out of dire poverty and I could build a life for myself. If I could, you know, get married before I have children. Martin Luther King Jr. talked about that a lot. The greatest way to stay out of poverty is to have a father and a mother, a two-parent household. And so I'm reading those books and I'm thinking through all of that and I'm creating a path for myself. I talked to Dr. Ben Carlson less than a year ago, and, you know, he grew up in concrete jungle, city poor. I grew up in country poor. And you guys are familiar with his story, I'm sure. And we were just talking and I asked him, I said, do you think, given today's economic, social environment, that if you and I were back in those buckets of poverty, if you and I would be able to climb ourselves out of that situation, do you think it'd be easier to climb our way out of poverty today versus, you know, back then, so many decades ago? And he agreed with me that it would be next to impossible for us, if we were in the exact same situation we grew up in today, for us to climb our way out of dire poverty. And I agree with that. I mean, he agreed with me, and I feel it and I see it. Now, what do we do? Because that's the situation. That's the reality. And it really does. I say this all the time. You change how you vote, you will change how you're living. You will change your policies. Unfortunately, these people we vote for, they truly create policies, one of them being this tax bill that has now left the House and has moved over into the Senate. How these people vote matter. And this bill is going to pass. So if it's going to pass, then I want to make sure that I'm getting as much as I possibly can for me and my family. You should be doing the exact same thing. You should be calling Senator McCormick. I don't even know, you know, I mean, Fetterman. I mean, what's the difference between Fetterman and Biden? I don't know. They're both cognitively impaired. Yes, I know many of you think, you know, Fetterman is in the middle of the road. No, he's not. He's still the horrible individual he was prior to having the stroke. Now he's just a horrible individual who has had a stroke. I will never forget And never forgive the fact that no one really wants to talk about how this man chased a black man down with a shotgun for the crime of just jogging while black. So I know y'all don't want to talk about that, but that's the reality, right? And so, but you should be calling these representatives and holding their feet to the fire to stop the grandstanding. Don't do any grandstanding. And to vote according to what is impacting your kitchen table, not based on what somebody, some influencer, Charlie Kirk or whoever, you know, whoever, plug in a name, the latest conservative. It's not about what they're thinking. You look at your refrigerator. When you open up your refrigerator, don't you think that if someone is receiving your tax dollars to have food stamps, do you think they should be eating better than you? Do you think they should be able to go in and buy lobster and have a cart full of all these sugary diabetic things, which now causes them to have diabetes, and now they have to go and use Medicaid that you too are paying for at a federal level? We pay 90% of that. Don't you think? So we have to start thinking. We have to get engaged. I know the GOP in Pennsylvania sucks. But this is what it is. It is what it is. We have to get involved. We have to find people who are similar to us in our way of viewing the world. And we have to engage. There is no shortcut. And no one is floating down from on high politically to save you.
This is Talk Radio 1210, WPHT On Demand. On Demand.
Because I want to talk about culture, right? I want to talk about, you know, I think I'm going to name this Dear Black People. So y'all call me. Tell me what you think. 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. This is my Dear Black People segment. And I think all of us, because of, you know, our packaging, we get to speak to our own in a way with a greater degree of authenticity than some of the others, right? So like, for example, I get a lot of people who text me, tweet me, all kinds of things when I say you can't teach old dogs new trick. Because when you look at who voted for Donald Trump after November election, every single group of people except for one moved towards Donald Trump. I don't care if you're black, white, rich, poor, urban, suburban, female, male, educated, college educated, not college educated. Every single group of young, old, every single group of people moved toward Donald Trump except for one group of people, age 85 and over, those doggone baby boomers. And if you look at all of the rioting, it's a bunch of silver hair. Old hippies. And everybody's like, oh, you can't lump us all in there together. And then my response is, it's your responsibility to speak to your own kind, right? More so than anyone else, because you can walk into there and be like, hey, girl, sit down somewhere, okay, before you break a hip. So you guys can, so those 65 and over, you can do that. And likewise, for me as a black person, I am particularly interested with the black culture, black community, black people. And I remember when I ran for U.S. Senate, well, U.S. Congress the first time, you know, in 2020 had all these Black Lives Matter riots really showing up. But there was a rally, Black Lives Matter rally in my district. And they did not invite me to come and speak, although I was the first black person. You know, they love the first black of everything, but I wasn't the right black person, right? Because I'm a Republican, I'm a conservative, but I showed up anyway, and I walked up on stage anyway, and I took the mic anyway, because what you gonna do about it? And my response to black people, it was like a ton of black folks, was after this is all over, after the smoke has settled, we need to make sure we have more in these communities than broken glass, than broken out windows in buildings. We need to make sure that if we're going to get anything, that it's economic empowerment, that we create an environment where businesses want to move into our communities. We want to make sure that at the end of the day, we haven't wasted all of this opportunity and capital, that you actually have businesses wanting to move in, better schools, yada, yada, all of that. Because I recognize it's about culture and it's about getting something real. So play that first clip from Charlamagne, the false god. Leonard is his actual name, but go by Charlamagne. Go ahead.
Yes, another iconic, you know, interview with Dr. Umar here on The Breakfast Club. I love when Dr. Umar pulls up. Whether you agree with him or disagree with him, he gives you something to think about. And at the very least, he makes you proud to be black.
Do you put black over everything, Dr. Umar?
Explain that a little more when you say, do I put black over everything?
I asked you a couple of questions in this.
Like, go ahead.
Black magic or white privilege?
Black magic.
Okay. Black coffee or white wine?
Black coffee.
Yeah, man. Whenever Dr. Umar comes up here, man, it makes me want to be even more blacker. But he also makes me want to stay away from white people for a little while.
Okay, so let's just pause right there. Okay. Now, obviously, a lot of this is just tongue in cheek. It's parody, you know, black coffee or white wine, black coffee, right? And he does this throughout the whole thing. But here's my point, is that Charlamagne the False God speaks to over 5 million people just on one of his shows. So just on, I mean, he's everywhere. I mean, he's on podcasts, on over 150 radio stations all across the nation, book deal, working with Kevin Hart on something. I mean, the guy is everywhere, on the cover of different magazines. He's everywhere. And so he's speaking to a culture that is believing there is something, you know, that I'm proud to be black mean I'm, you know, it's just in how I feel. Not, for example, when I drive, anyone who knows me know I cannot stand driving. So if I'm going to drive, I want to be entertained as I'm driving. I love driving through different communities, seeing different groups and, you know, how people live and all of that. I just find it interesting, right? And how is it that when I know exactly when I've driven into a predominantly Hindu community, I know exactly, or Indian community, I know exactly when I've driven into a predominantly Italian community or a Russian community, and I know exactly when I am driving into a predominantly black community by the number of mattresses and trash on the corner of the street. The number of T-Mobile versus something of industry in the neighborhood. And that really pisses me off. It makes me angry that we think being black and proud has something to do with, how many people are patting me on the back, or, you know, how many people are kowtowing down to me. But it's not real. It's not substantive. No matter how many times, I think I may have mentioned this to you guys when I was running for U.S. Senate now, and I won't say the name of the university, but I go to lunch. I'm asked to go to lunch by a very senior member in the executive part of the university cabinet. And this particular person, he picked the restaurant, a white man. He picked the restaurant, and it was a very upscale area that we walked, that he had invited me to. And I walk in, and before I can even sit down, he had apologized for his white privilege 3 times. Before I can even take my coat off and sit down. Now, he picked the restaurant. He picked the community. I'm just walking in, and before I can sit down, take my coat off and sit down, he had already apologized for his white privilege, as if he was giving me something, as if he was gifting me something. And I explained to him the third time he said it the next time you apologize for your white privilege, I want you to pull out your checkbook and write over some of those privileges to me. Because everything else is perfunctory. It's a performance. It's theater arts. It does not move me out of one zip code and into another zip code. It does not put steak versus bologna on my plate at night, right? So it's just performance art. And a lot of this black lives, black magic, you go girl, it's performance art. It's not real. But you have someone like Charlemagne the False God speaking it. And people actually believe this, and they think that this is what it means to be black. This is what it means to be black, right? Having someone, CRT, being taught in school, critical race theory, removing math from different tests, not having the SAT exam being optional. Now having SAT, ACT being optional. Those things don't benefit black people. If anything, making ACT and SAT optional benefit wealthy white families who have the money to get their children into these Ivy League schools, but their children don't have the grades to get into those Ivy League schools. So they use the color of my skin, they use the history of this nation with slavery to make us all feel bad about something none of us really participated in, to get rid of ACT and SAT. But it doesn't benefit black people. It benefits their children who weren't smart enough to get high ACT scores. That's really what's going on. But you have people like Charlemagne the False God talking about blackity black, and I'm so proud to be black, and it makes me hate white people. That's foolishness. And it's actually causing rifts. It's making our country racist again. I'll be back on the other side. You want to be a part of this conversation? Call me, 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210.
This is Talk Radio 1210, WPHT On Demand, On Demand.
Let me see. I want to talk about this guy selling human remains. I mean, this is crazy. Harvard employee admits to selling brains, human head, skin, hands, faces, and other body parts. It's crazy. And I'm over here looking at YouTube, and you guys talking about the girl who slept with like over 583 guys in 6 hours, but couldn't go all the way, couldn't complete it. She was supposed to get a record 24 hours, but ended up in the hospital. I mean, what is going on in our country? What is going on? These are just the headlines. So let me just tell y'all about this guy, this former Harvard. Now he's former, but he was an employee of Harvard when he was doing this. Harvard morgue manager pleads guilty to trafficking stolen human remains. 57-year-old Cedric Lodge of New Hampshire pled guilty on this past Wednesday for selling human remains. Like I said, he was selling all parts, right? Brains, head, human head, hands, face, and other body parts. I have a caller. Joan, is it from New Jersey?
Joanne,
what's up, Joanne? How you doing?
Formerly a Philly girl.
What?
Listen to me, honey. I love everything you say. Oh. I love you to pieces.
Aw, thank you.
I can't tell you how I feel, Kathy. Honestly, just keep up doing the good work.
Aww.
You're doing a good job, and I hope they give you more time on 1210.
Oh, thank you so much, Joanne from New Jersey. Oh, I appreciate
that. Formerly a Philly girl.
Formerly a Philly girl. Look, I mean, once a Philly, always a Philly girl, right?
You know that. That's in my blood. Yes,
absolutely.
Kathy.
Oh, Joanne, thank you so much for calling. Blessings. Have a great weekend.
And God bless you.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Oh, that was so sweet. Oh, I love you guys. I'm telling you, when I play that song, nobody loves you like I love you. Guys, I love you guys. I do. I have such a heart for seeing people live well. And when I look at it, I don't care from what vantage point, whether I'm looking at it from an economic perspective, a social perspective, a cultural perspective. I mean, I want people to live well. Here's the number, 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. Call in. I just love that. But let me get back to this guy selling human body parts, because this is crazy. He participated in the sale and transport of human remains stolen from Harvard Medical School morgue. As the manager of the Harvard Medical School morgue, he removed human remains, including organs, brains, skin, hands, faces, dissected heads, and other parts from donated cadavers. So, and I just went to, you know how we, what is it, Body Works, where people donate their body to science, and you can go into, pay your money, go into the museum, and you can see the, okay, so this person was taking bodies, cadavers that had been donated to science, and he was selling off the body parts. And I had someone say, the real question is, who was buying it? And that is so true. And guess what? It was someone here in Pennsylvania. His name is, where's his name? Pauly is the last name. Where's the first name? Jeremy Pauly. Yes, Jeremy Pauly. And if you look up this guy, the Philadelphia Inquirer ran a story on him. And I mean, he looks like someone who would sell somebody body parts. I mean, he absolutely did. He absolutely does. He looks like someone who I would cross the street. I wouldn't want to walk on the same street as this man. And so anyway, Jeremy Pauly, but here's the thing. Let me just try to see if I can go back to that article, is that it showed, oh my goodness, I'm not going to be able to find it. Oh my goodness, he looks crazy. Joshua Taylor, 46, admitted in court to being a member of a human remains trafficking conspiracy that included Jeremy Pauly. And Jeremy got, I was trying to find the article where he only got 2 years of on probation. I mean, the man looks crazy. Here it is. The Philadelphia Inquirer. The Pennsylvania man who pleaded guilty last year to federal charges of participating to buy and sell stolen human body parts was sentenced to probation in a related case. For illegally possessing human flesh in his self-described oddities, quote unquote, collection. So he was sentenced to probation. That's Pennsylvania for you, right? Someone in Arkansas did something similar, and they were sentenced to 15 years in prison. Absolutely. What is redeeming? Jesus can redeem their hearts, but we need their behinds to get off the street. Oh, I have a caller. Let me take that. Hey, Mary, what's up?
Hi, how are you? Good morning.
Oh, thank you. I'm doing well.
I'm waking up late. I'm drinking my coffee. My voice is a little scratchy. I won't say it's allergies.
Yeah, it's probably allergies. But thank you so much for calling. What's on your mind?
My pleasure. So before I talk about the topic, I just want to say, the caller before, I'm right with her. You're doing a wonderful job, and I love to hear what you have to say.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Oh, my goodness.
You're welcome. No, really. I wanted to call before. I was like, wow, she is really spot on.
Good. Praise the Lord.
Opinion,
I'm grateful. Thank you so much.
Well, so, listen, I just wanted to say, I totally think about how the United States is becoming a two, you either have it or you don't have it.
Yep.
And it's awful.
Yeah, it
is.
It's
really awful for the future of our country, and it's something that's very difficult to turn back around.
It is very difficult.
All these free programs, it's out of hand. It's just totally out of hand.
It is. And I agree.
I grew up poor as well. Mm. Maybe not as poor as you, but we were pretty poor.
Yes.
And, you know, I would hear my parents talk. So I kind of knew. Mm-hmm. And once you started going to school and, you know, seeing different things, you realize how poor you were.
You're right.
So it's an emotional thing for me because I don't want the people behind me to have to deal with that.
Yeah. And you probably have worked very hard to create a different life for yourself, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And now
I'm not where I really want to be.
Yeah.
I mean, I could have been, but I, you know, taking care of sick, you know, life gets in the way. So I did okay for myself.
Yeah.
But not where my aspirations, you know, I didn't make that first million.
And now it's getting increasingly challenging, right?
It is. It is.
Well,
and it's like, I can remember growing up and, you know, just hearing my dad say, well, you know, if you're not on the golf course making deals, you know, that's where it's happening. And it feels like to me that changed. And now it feels like it's going back to that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like people who do better help people who are in a certain economic income. And you can tell people, I mean, I can tell within my own family, people do not see people who don't have money in the same way. They don't, like as a society, I don't think. I think having money and being prosperous is something we put on a pedestal. And we're not really teaching the values that really help people get there, I think.
Mary, I agree with you. Thank you so much for calling in. I truly appreciate it.
Sure.
Yes. Well, make sure you call in. Whenever you have a thought and you want to share it, just call in. I appreciate
that. The man who got, you know, in Pennsylvania, when I read that article, I was like, oh, my God, he should be in there for 40 years.
Like, would you want someone like that living next door to you? Like, the guy has human flesh.
Yes.
No, you should. I mean, you know, but that, too, is a part of this new culture where people who are doing real crimes and harming people are getting the benefit of the doubt and allowed to just walk and mingle among the rest of us. And then those of us, I mean, I still have friends that I speak with who, you know, because, I mean, like, they didn't even go into the Capitol on January 6th. They were just out there minding their own business, just looking, and they were tossed into jail for 4 years or three years.
My God.
And so it's just this weaponization. It's this two-tier kind of thing. It doesn't feel equitable any longer in our country. And
no.
So I think I'm being told I'm going to break. So, Mary, thank you so much for calling.
All right. Thank you. Have a great day. Have a happy Memorial Day.
Yes,
bye.
You too, Mary. Bye-bye. God blessings. Here's the number, 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. I will leave it up to you guys. Whatever. When I come back, I only have a few moments.
Thanks for listening to Talk Radio 1210 WPHT On Demand.
Yes, I'm jamming to my own music, to the beat of my own drums. Mary, Joanne, you ladies, you rock. Thank you so much. I truly appreciate you calling in. That number again is 855-839-1210. You know what? I'm just going to leave it. Let's play that clip with the woman singing the old Negro spiritual. Now, just for context, this is the DNC, the Democrat National Committee Conference Chair Forum. So there was a line of people, candidates who they were going to vote for to be the leader of the Democrat National Committee, kind of like the RNC, the Republican National Committee. So this is the DNC. This is one of the people who were running for that seat. And this is how she closed out her time on that stage. Play it.
Next DNC chair. And I just want to give you all a little bit of something that's been on my heart here over the last couple of days. You fight on, you fight on, you fight on, you fight on. When your government is doing you wrong, you fight on. Oh, you fight on.
Oh, my goodness. I don't care if she's black. That's not the point. The point is, this is the Democrat Party. This is what they have to offer us. Do you have that little pencil neck boy video of David Hogg?
That's what Jasmine does. And we need a hell of a lot more people that are out there that are willing to do just that and call people out on their BS and not say, oh, my God, Republicans are going to criticize me for saying this. Screw that. They're going to criticize you no matter what. So what we should be asking ourselves is, what are we really fighting for? Yeah. Because we know it matters. And I think...
Okay, I don't know.
Jasmine
that
Crockett
is.
Chose to vote against the Lake and Raleigh Act.
Until we get what we...
Oh, my goodness. Come on, Kirk. That was supposed to play really smooth.
Because it was my ancestors that built this motherfucker. Okay,
yeah.
I'm done now.
That's Jasmine Crockett. Okay, just pause. That's Jasmine Crockett. She's just ratchet. And that was her cussing, right? And always going back to slavery days. And yes, we can talk about slavery days and we could talk about the lingering impact of slavery days, right? I mean, I remember being on the campaign trail for the Senate race, and I don't know what county I was in, but I was on the teeth part of the state and at a mushroom farm, I believe. And the white owner of the mushroom farm was the one who actually told me about, you know, how some farms were stolen and taken away from black people and given to white people. There are many books. After I talked to him about it, I went and started reading about this. And so, yes, there are some lingering effects of not just slavery, but of Jim Crow laws, all of the redlining, all of, you know, that allows certain white families to have land in their possession today that would have been in the hands of a black person and perhaps would have maintained in the black person's family lineage. Yes, there's a lot of that. And we should be able to talk about it, but you know, but again, Jasmine Crockett, for example, being on a national and international level, talking about honey child and, you know, cussing and fussing and always going into a rant about slavery days, something, you know, I mean, again, it's perfunctory. It's not real. It's not genuine. It doesn't start real conversations that allows everyone to come to the table with their, you know, with their integrity intact and be able to sit down and have a real conversation about how do we all move forward and make sure we spread out the economic resources. And for me at this moment, it's all about the middle class for me. It's all about how do we create, and it's not color based, right? It's based on those of us who have worked very hard to climb out of poverty. Those of us who want to climb out of poverty. There are a lot of people who are in a state of poverty who don't want to be in poverty, who want to work hard. Who are willing to work hard, who are willing to keep their nose clean and to climb out. But the ladder they would use to climb out of poverty and into a better economic situation, that ladder is being rescinded. I think it was Mary who said that there's a concentration of not just wealth in the hands of a few people, but there's an increasing concentration of opportunities that unless you know someone, unless someone holds the door for you, that you won't have the opportunity or the open door or the access to knowledge. Things are getting very tight for a lot of people. And I would be remiss if I did not ask, how many of you voted? If you're in Pennsylvania, how many of you went and voted in this past Tuesday's election? Yeah, there was an election on Tuesday. Did you vote? Because if you're in my school district, we have a bunch of Democrats who want to raise taxes. That hurts and harms the middle class. Okay, you've been listening to Kathy Barnett on The Kathy Barnett Show. Let me hear what you have to say. Find me out there on Twitter at Kathy4Truth. Kathy4Truth. Let's talk about it. Blessings.
This is Talk Radio 1210, WPHT On Demand. On Demand.